You're listening to Rami Makhlouf on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Yes, you are. Rami Makhlouf with you on a Monday evening till 9 o'clock alongside Sean Sears producing this fine program. You can get in at 312-644-6767. Dial that if you want to give me a call. Text that if you want to give your thoughts in written word. That is welcome as well. And you can tweet at 670 The Score or at Rami, R-A-M-I-E, is tweeting. Jam-packed show for you now in the next 3 hours. Ricky O'Donnell, he covers the Bulls for SB Nation. He'll join me at 6:20. Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus will be here at 7 o'clock. And Megan Montemuro, she's the Cubs beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. She'll be here at 8, and much, much more in between those folks. Again, 312-644-6767. If you want to get in on the show this evening, Rami Makhlouf with you on a Monday night. And I always say, and I mean it every time, it's always an honor and a pleasure to be on these airwaves that I grew up listening to talk about the teams that I grew up rooting for. And it is. It always is. But sometimes it's harder than it is others. Okay, it's still an honor. It's still a pleasure. I'm happy to be here. But the teams in this town sometimes make it harder and not as much of an honor and certainly not as much of a pleasure to watch and talk about Chicago sports teams. But getting stuff off your chest is good as well, right? That also feels good, and that can be a form of entertainment. And I want to start the night off. We're going to get into like a bigger picture Chicago sports thing here. But the news over the weekend was that DeMar DeRozan was traded in a sign-and-trade. He goes to the Sacramento Kings. Three-team deal that also involved the Spurs. All you really need to know is DeMar DeRozan to Sacramento, 2 second-round picks coming back to the Bulls. And I'll get into the trade compensation, where the Bulls are at, and just what the hell they're doing. I wanted to do that a little later in the show when we had time to take your calls and give you a chance to vent on that. Again, we got a guest coming up in the second segment, so we'll try and squeeze some calls and some text in here at 312-644-6767 if you want to react to DeMar DeRozan going to Sacramento in exchange for 2 second-round picks. But I just wanted to react to DeMar DeRozan and his time, how he'll be remembered here in Chicago. Can we call it a legacy? Can we call it an era? And I don't want to make this sound like I'm crapping on DeMar DeRozan or like that. I love DeMar DeRozan. I love the player. I love the dude. I loved his cameo in the Kendrick Lamar video and showing up at the concert. I love everything about DeMar DeRozan. All right, and DeMar DeRozan, much like Bulls fans, deserve much better in his time in Chicago. That's where I'm going with this. Not that DeMar DeRozan was on any level a disappointment or didn't live up to expectations or do what the Bulls brought him here to do. He was awesome, man. 2 All-Star games, 25.5 points, for almost 50% shooting. He played in almost every game. He missed 17 games over 3 seasons. He was everything you want in a professional athlete that your kids are going to watch and look up to and root for. He was great as a teammate, as a leader, as a mentor. I have no beef with DeMar DeRozan whatsoever. My beef lies with the Chicago Bulls. And I'm sure you remember, you know, he was part of that 2021 class of free agents that they brought in along with Vucevic and Lonzo Ball. And a lot of people had their hopes up when the Bulls made those moves. And I can see why. I never thought that was going to work. We'll never know if it was going to work or not, but I just never thought it was going to work. I heard Kendall Gill on, I think it was with Grody on The Score last week sometime. I don't remember exactly which night it was. And he actually reminded me, I forgot all about this. I don't know if you guys remember this, but he actually reminded me and everybody who was listening to Grody that the Bulls, for the first half of that season, when they had that trio, were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. I forgot all about that. Then Lonzo Ball gets hurt, and everything is downhill from there, not just for that season, but for the next 3 seasons. But I just never thought that was going to work. That was good enough to maybe make you a 3 or a 4 seed and make a little bit of noise in the playoffs and you know, provide some fun, entertaining basketball for Bulls fans, but that never even came to fruition because of the Lonzo Ball injuries. And who knows? Maybe they are some kind of a contender if Lonzo Ball never gets hurt. But bottom line is they weren't. And bottom line is DeMar DeRozan was a very good player on a mediocre team for 3 years. And that's what it'll boil down to. As far as the story of DeMar DeRozan goes, to look at it from the other side, and I think this tells you what his time in Chicago meant to the Bulls as an organization in terms of this era, again, if you want to call it that, which is not memorable. Like, DeMar DeRozan will be remembered as a Toronto Raptor. DeMar DeRozan, depending on what he does in Sacramento, he might be remembered as a Sacramento King before he's remembered as a Bull. His time in San Antonio probably too short, but he won't be like this. This won't be at the top of the list of DeMar DeRozan's legacy when we talk about what he accomplished in his career when he decides to call it quits, whenever that time might be, because it was just a very forgettable time from a team standpoint of a middling organization that was more than content to be mediocre or worse, to try and be the sixth best team in the Eastern Conference year in and year out, when it was obvious to all of us, especially after the Lonzo Ball injury, that this thing wasn't really going anywhere. And the Bulls just took way too long. Again, we'll get into more big picture stuff about the trade, about the Bulls' plan, if they have one, and where they go from here. We'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. But as far as DeMar DeRozan goes, he'll be remembered as a very good player on an average at best team for 3 years. And that's sad for that dude, man. That's sad for him. That's sad for Bulls fans, and that's sad for DeMar DeRozan. But it really just kind of feeds into what has been Chicago sports here of late. And I'd like your thoughts on this at 312-644-6767. Phone or text if you want to get in on the show. And I know Sean Sears is back in the studio. And I'm for full disclosure, I'm in Milwaukee right now. But I know Sean Sears is back in the studio, and he's a suffering Chicago sports fan, like yes. A lot of you are. I came across this tweet, and it's been making the rounds, so I'm sorry I can't give the person who first put it out there and had it go kind of viral. 1.6 million views on this tweet right now. It's made the rounds. You might have seen it, but over the last year, now that includes the Bears' most recent season, the Bulls' most recent season, the Blackhawks' most recent season, and the Cubs and Sox current seasons, a 379 combined win percentage. A 379 combined win percentage with right now we'd be good for four last place finishes. And the Bulls, who finished fourth in the Central Division. Four out of five teams finishing in last place in the last year, and the Bulls sort of scuffling to a fourth place finish. And really, for all intents and purposes, that's no different than finishing last place. And a 379 combined win percentage. Now, that's just the last year. Now, I tried to go back and like get records from other years and other eras, decades, handfuls of years, and my head just started spinning. I'm not a smart man. It was just too much math for your boy. So I'm just going off of memory here, okay? And maybe y'all can help me out. For the record, I'm 44 years old. I'm just going off my life of what I remember in Chicago sports. It's not just this last year. We're going on 3-4 years now. Back to the Sox collapse. Wait, Sean, do you know when this, that was in 2022 that the Sox started falling apart after the Field of Dreams game? That felt like the peak, the pinnacle of that Sox team that had so much promise, and then it's kind of been downhill from there. Was that 2021 or 22? I can't remember. I think it was 2021. So going back to 2021 up until now, halfway through 2024, this is about as bad of a 3 or 4 year stretch And tell me if I'm wrong. Is this as bad as it's been in Chicago sports for 3 or 4 years as it's ever been? And maybe people out there older than me who went through suffering, I don't even understand, can chime in on the conversation. 312-644-6767. Because, again, I'm 44. So I grew up in the 80s where we had the Bears. Yeah, they only won one Super Bowl, but you at least had a contending team year in and year out. Obviously, in the 90s, we had Michael Jordan and the Bulls, except for 2 years where he went and played baseball. The 2000s, there might have been some stretches in there where it was kind of rough, but the White Sox won a World Series in 2005, so you had that there. And that decade, that broke up any sort of malaise that might have been in Chicago sports. And then in the 10s, you had the Blackhawks and the Cubs sort of carrying things for Chicago sports and giving us something to root for and be happy about. The 2020s, man, again, after the Sox collapse with what the Bears have been, ever since the collapse of the Matt Nagy era with what the Bulls have been, just spinning their wheels in mediocrity. Now, I'm not a big hockey guy. I understand Connor Bedard is pretty good, and maybe there is some light at the end of the tunnel there. But from what I understand, it hasn't been great for the Blackhawks for 2 or 3 years now. And we're in the midst of one of the worst baseball seasons that I can remember in this city, where the Cubs are 41-48 in what was supposed to be a good year. And again, we'll get into some big picture Cubs stuff later on in the show when I have a little bit more room for you guys to get in at 312-644-6767. And somehow, they're not the worst team. They're not the worst baseball team in Chicago right now, as the White Sox are 25-64 and headed for a historically bad season if they continue at this pace. This is as bad of a 3, 4, 5 year stretch for Chicago sports as I can remember. Am I prisoner? Because that can happen. That can happen. Being prisoner of the moment can happen. Am I just being prisoner of the moment here? Has it been worse? And I'm just so stuck in it, so mired in it right now, that it seems like the worst that it's ever been, but there've been darker days, because I can't remember them if there have. And I'm sorry to start off the show being, you know, negative Nancy. Are we still allowed to say negative Nancy? I'm sorry to start off the show being a pessimist, but it's just, that came across my timeline, I don't know, 3, 4 times yesterday as I was thinking about getting ready for this show, and I guess I'm just trying to cope. Maybe I'm just getting on the couch and you guys can get on the couch too, and we can just sort of talk this out together. You know what I mean? Like you're at the therapist office.
Just kick back your feet, relax, yeah. You know, and then let us know why the Cubs are really pissing you off, you know?
Or you're on the better help call, like Dan Bernstein talks about in the ads. however it is you get your
therapy. We'll be your better help. We'll do it for free, all right?
Exactly. We don't have the video component, unfortunately, but you can call 312-644-6767. You can also text that number or tweet at 670 the score, at Rami is tweeting. Sean, am I prisoner of the moment? Can you remember a worst stretch in Chicago sports?
Man, I mean, I feel like 2004 maybe was tough for me, at least as a Cubs fan. The Bears weren't great. Of course, they go on that run in 05. But, like, I don't know. There might have been an era in, like, 2000, maybe, like, 11 to 14 where, like, the Bears were bad, the Cubs weren't great, the White Sox weren't great. The Bulls, like, were kind of coming out of the Derrick Rose injury, but yeah, the Blackhawks were really good, and we were getting championships there. So, like, now I look back at that and it's kind of gross because of the Blackhawks history and whatnot. But like in the moment, at least it was like, hey man, at least we got the Blackhawks. They're bringing us parades, you know, like we had that going. So like, it's hard to say that was worse, but like outside of the Hawks, everyone was garbage.
Yeah. And you're right. The stuff that we now know going on behind the scenes with the Hawks in retrospect, right, like right. It does. It's kind of like the Sammy Sosa era of that, of those Cubs teams where it leaves a bad taste in your mouth, even in hindsight. But at the time, and just talking about what they were doing on the court, on the ice, on the field of play, whatever the case might be, because that was the first, as I was kind of breaking this down in my head and looking for times that might have been as bad or worse, that 2010 to 2015 era did occur to me. But again, you had the Blackhawks carrying it for them there, and then the Cubs and the Blackhawks were good for a short window. Right. I don't remember all the teams ever coincidingly being this bad. You know, yeah, I can't think of it.
It's scary too now because we're putting all our eggs in one basket, being the Chicago Bears, who like
I was just going to say
every one of these teams seems to stomp our hearts every season, no matter what happens.
I was just going to, because I was going to try and end it on a positive note. I know we got to get to break.
Yeah, let me just throw the mood here, everyone. Sorry.
I know, because we got to get to the break here in a few minutes and talk some Bulls with Ricky O'Donnell. So, but that was going to be kind of how I tied a bow on this segment, Sean, is where is the light at the end of the tunnel for Chicago sports fans? Looking at four, essentially five last place teams over the last year and a 379 combined win percentage, who breaks this, man? Who gets us out of this and gives us a little something to cheer for and be happy about? And it's got to be the Bears that give us the best chance as Chicago sports fans, right?
Bears.
And even with that, thank you. I appreciate it, Grody. Even with that, like, we're going on a good half of last season, the most important prospect, quarterback prospect, maybe prospect at all that's ever been drafted by the Chicago Bears, and what looks like a good offseason on paper. Like, that's what we're pinning our hopes on.
And right. And we've got Hard Knocks coming up with that as well too. True. Like, so there's going to be a ton of content coming out of that. So there's, hopefully it's good, but you know, there's a lot of positivity right now with the Bears. So
there is,
you feel
there
a little.
And I know I said I was going to try and end it on a high note, a positive note, but I don't know about you, Sean, and push back on this if you'd like.
Sure.
and be the positive one here. But when it comes to the Bears, I see everything they did in the offseason. I'm on the Caleb Williams bandwagon. But it's looked good before, and it hasn't worked out. Like I feel like my baseline my ceiling for excitement with the Bears probably lower than a lot of people. Even as good as it looks, and as excited as I am about Caleb Williams, just the Bears as an organization and the way that they've failed to capitalize when it's looked good in the past. Maybe it's never looked this good. I don't know. I don't know if we can say that on paper. Maybe it's never looked this good to kind of start a new era, but I've seen it look good on paper in the past, and promises being made and optimism riding high. And the Bears have probably let us down when that was the case more than the other four teams that we're talking about. Doesn't mean they will again, but they have let us down when it's looked good in the past more frequently than these other teams. When the Bulls, when we thought they were going to be good, they turned out to be pretty good. When the Cubs, we thought they, short of this year, when we thought they were going to be good, they turned out to be good. The Sox, before they collapsed a couple years ago, when we expected them to be good, they were good. The Blackhawks, again, I'm not a big hockey guy, but I think they live up to expectations when the bar is set high. The Bears have let us down before when things looked like they were about to turn up. Am I being too pessimistic with that takeaway?
No, that's exactly how I feel as a Bears fan too. I just, you just never know with the team. And I mean, I thought they were going to be a lot better last year, and you know, they kind of figured some things out, but still wasn't quite where we were expecting them to be, or maybe, you know, maybe people thought they could be, but you know, it's the Bears, man. They just seem to find goofy ways to do things, even when they are a really good team. You know, all of a sudden Rex Grossman can't throw a football again, or maybe he hadn't been able to all season. We just surpassed that somehow, or you know, Cody Parkey hits a double doink, and you don't go
to bring up that Eagles
team.
You had to bring up
exactly
that
name. Like there's, and I'm sure there's like plenty of people listening, and I'm sure texting if you think of an awful Bears moment. They're thinking like, oh, but this was even worse. Or you're not even there. You weren't alive for this. Like it's been going on for years. They haven't won championships since George Halas was like a thing here.
I wouldn't mind hearing from folks who could tell us about times that were worse. Maybe that'll
I'm
make
sure.
us.
I'm sure they can. I mean, it's right you. There in their mind too.
You can make us feel better.
Exactly.
Maybe it'll make us feel better. Did get a couple of texts. 847 says this is the worst. And responding to it, another 8 from the 847 says by far the worst that should. My first thought whenever I go, this is the worst that it's ever been. Like there's a part of my brain going, really, Rami? Is this really the worst, or are you just being prisoner of the moment and a big baby about things? But no, this might legitimately be the worst Chicago sports has been in a long time. But that doesn't mean we can't have fun talking about it, maybe even complaining about it, getting things off our chest when it comes to our favorite teams. And we'll talk some more Bulls and more about the DeMar DeRozan move with Ricky O'Donnell, covers the NBA and the Bulls for SB Nation. He'll join me, Rami Makhlouf, with you on The Score on a Monday night.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
You're going into free agency this offseason. What's the vibes like in Chicago? Are you holding your cars close, trying to see how it play out, or is there somewhere you would like to return back to?
It's definitely, somewhere I'd like to return to. I think more so than anybody. You know, when a job ain't done with me, Lou, no matter how tough the situation may look, I'm one of those guys that try to stick it through and try to make something out of nothing, the city is great. I love the city. The organization been great, so it's definitely a place I would love to return to and just, take care of unfinished business.
That was DeMar DeRozan in early June saying he'd love to stay in Chicago and remain a Bull. And the Bulls at that time were saying similar things. And the tunes slowly started changing as soon as the season ended. And it led to DeRozan eventually being dealt to the Sacramento Kings in a three-way deal that also involved the Spurs. 2 second-round picks coming back to Chicago the other way. Joining me to talk about that and some NBA. He covers the NBA and the Bulls for SB Nation. Pleasure to welcome in Ricky O'Donnell. Ricky, how are you this evening, my man?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. First of all, what was your reaction to the compensation that the Bulls got? Do you think it was enough for a DeMar DeRozan? And we could even package it up with the other veteran they traded this offseason, Alex Caruso. Have they gotten enough for those two guys this offseason and the trades that they made, in your opinion?
No, absolutely not. And the Bulls missed their big opportunity to cash in and sell high on those guys at the top of their value, and they totally blew it for Arturis Karnišovas' delusional goal of chasing the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference, which he failed at the last 2 years. I think moving on from DeRozan and Caruso is a smart move for the Bulls, unquestionably. But to do it, it just feels like it's still reflecting so poorly on this era of the team. They're stuck with Nikola Vucevic now because they gave him too much money in his deal last year. No one's going to take him with 2 years and $40 million left. They can't give away Zach LaVine for anything at the moment. So it's just a really poor reflection on how Arturis has performed since he's taken the job. This big three experiment was a spectacular failure by him. And you can see that in their lowly returns for their two best players in Caruso and DeRozan, and the fact that they still can't get off LaVine and Vucevic.
Did you think when the season ended, because I agree with you 100% that they held on to these guys and sold too late. Did you think when the season ended, though, that still somehow they'd be able to get more for them? Or did you kind of feel like their value had diminished once the season ended?
They definitely could have got more for Caruso, I think. But, we never really got to see the best and final offers from a lot of teams. I think that Arturis fell in love with Josh Giddey. That's the type of guy he thought he could build the next Bulls team around. And instead of searching for, a lot of offers for a player like Caruso, who had wide appeal to many different contenders, he just took Giddey right away, didn't really use his leverage there to try to get more assets out of the team with the most assets in the NBA, in the Oklahoma City Thunder. So I think that's really just an example of them loving Giddey. And then for DeRozan, I think their hands were tied a bit. His market was very limited. I don't mind the return for DeRozan in a vacuum this offseason. I think getting 2 second-rounders for him is better than nothing, but certainly they could have got more for him at the trade deadline the year before that, when he was coming off his All-NBA season in 2022. So they just totally missed their window to try to stock up. And listen, the reality now is the Bulls are rebuilding, and they're going to have to get really lucky to pull it off, because they already have a negative asset base. They owe a draft pick to San Antonio. Even if they keep it, they don't have any incoming draft picks for blowing up this team. And their collection of young players is, while, you know, decent, it's not one that, like, really features a long-term building block. So yeah, the Bulls are going to have to get lucky to pull this off. And, you know, the odds are stacked against them in this current lottery climate, with a lot of teams racing towards the bottom for Cooper Flagg next year.
I did want to get into, like, the big picture and where they go from here, and you laid a little bit of it out there, and I think the answer is kind of, I don't know, but maybe you can shed some more light on it in a second. But one more question on DeRozan. I was talking before the break about, just from a narrative, storytelling, legacy standpoint, what will DeMar DeRozan's time in Chicago be remembered as, or how will it be remembered? And I said, much like Bulls fans, it was a guy who deserved better. Ricky, is that kind of how you'll remember his time here in Chicago? Just two or three wasted years for what is a great NBA player? And I saw you tweet that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer and Hall of Fame sweetheart. And I agree with you on that. Is it kind of just a guy who deserved better for two or three years of his career, in your opinion?
Yeah, I was mostly just calling him a nice guy with that tweet, not saying he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But I'll say that, you know, DeMar, he was such a professional when he was here. Incredible in crunch time, rarely turned the ball over, always played at his best in the biggest moments. And he exceeded really every expectation that he faced when the Bulls signed him. That deal mostly got panned when the Bulls, you know, traded a 2025 first-round pick, gave DeRozan, I think, 3 years, $85 million or whatever that contract was. And he outplayed it when everyone said that was way too rich of a deal. So I have nothing but respect for DeRozan. For someone to sort of come of age in the three-point revolution and never give in to the modern trends of the game, yet still find a way to be an awesome player, you know, on his own terms, I think was just really endearing about him. So he was phenomenal, but, you know, he also presented some tough team-building questions for the Bulls, because he couldn't play off the ball. He needed the ball in his hands. He wasn't a positive impact defender. And you just wonder why they got another guy with a lot of those same minuses in Josh Giddey without bringing a lot of the same strength that DeMar brought in terms of, you know, his ball security, his mid-range shooting, his crunch time brilliance. So DeMar was really good, but unfortunately, you know, the Bulls could not build a good team around him after Lonzo went down.
I know the answer to this question is largely speculation, Ricky, but I was also saying in the last segment, I think it was Kendall Gill on with Mark Grody in this time slot last week, who I heard, and he sort of reminded me, I had forgotten that before Lonzo Ball went down in that first year that they put those three free agents together, they were the one seed or hovering around the one seed for most of that time. I still never really believed in it, and who knows, we'll never know, but do you think it would have been a much different story if Lonzo Ball is healthy and Arturis Karnas, I'm going to have a hard time saying his name, Karnaschovas's vision was seen through with those three guys playing together?
Maybe, but we'll never know, and it doesn't really excuse the way he botched the situation following right. that. They knew right. how bad Lonzo's injury was. Lonzo was never going to play last season. Even the year before that, it seemed unlikely he was going to play. So you have a guy who, I mean, Lonzo Ball at his best, maybe a top 60, top 70 player in the NBA, and he was the skeleton key that was going to turn a 39-win team into one competing deep in the Eastern Conference. I'm not totally sure. I do think that Lonzo was a phenomenal player and a really great fit around what the Bulls had built, but, you know, it does not excuse at all the way AK screwed this up. He held on to his guys way too long, and he set very lowly goals for himself and still failed to reach them. So, you know, you could just tell by the lack of return the Bulls got that, you know, this era of the team is just a massive failure. And, you know, that's the case because Arturis couldn't meet the reality of Lonzo's injury at the time.
Ricky O'Donnell, SB Nation, my guest for a few more minutes here on 670 The Score. So you kind of got into it a little bit there, Ricky, and you started touching on what kind of scares me about this, because I'm glad the Bulls are realizing this isn't going to work and they're going in a different direction. But as you laid out with Vooch's contract situation and with Zach LaVine's contract situation, those guys are going to be hard to move. And you have an okay core of young players here where if they aren't able to trade those two guys and put them with that core, I feel like that's a team that's just good enough to sort of sniff around the play-in and be mediocre and not do what I think Bulls fans want them to do here, which is tank. It's hard to say, and you don't want to see losing basketball, but I feel like this team isn't yet, unless they can move Vooch and LaVine, I don't feel like they're at a place where they can really tank right now. It's good enough to win a few games and be in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's getting really crowded at the bottom of the league. The Nets obviously blew up their team this year. They have a clear direction. They're straight up tanking. The Wizards are definitely going to be worse than the Bulls. The Pistons and Hornets have some good young players, but they've never taken a step forward. The Pistons won 14 games last year. It's sort of hard to think that they're going to take, you know, such a big leap that they'll pass the Bulls. And then, you know, Utah, are they going to join the race to the bottom if they trade Lauri Markkanen? The Blazers are already really bad in the West. So, yeah, it's getting crowded down there. And I think, you know, for the Bulls to really pull this off, they need the guy. They need the franchise player they're going to build around it. And Cooper Flagg is that. There's no doubt about it. He's going to Duke this year. He'll be the biggest one-and-done superstar in college basketball since Zion Williamson. He's a lock to be the number one pick, but only one team is going to get him, and there's a lot of really bad teams this year. So for the Bulls, it's vital to keep their pick because it's a pretty strong draft, even after Flagg, so they have to be in the top 10. You know, the worst-case scenario would be giving the Spurs the 11th pick in the draft to complete that DeRozan trade. And we'll see. I mean, it's getting pretty crowded. I think they absolutely need to get off Vucevic. They need to get off Zach LaVine. Those two guys will not be happy here. Vucevic is going to demand too many touches. He's going to slow down the pace around Josh Giddey and shooters. So Arturs has to find a way to get rid of those guys without giving up some of the few remaining assets he has left. I think it's going to be a long season for the Bulls, but it will be more fun if it's actually a clean slate and you can see the younger guys develop a bigger role, rather than having LaVine and Vooch still on the team because Arturs gave him so much money, he can't give him away.
And I feel like the way out of this is two more trades or one trade involving those two guys where we're all sitting around going afterwards going, really? That's all you got for Zach LaVine, or that's all you got for a Vooch? But I think they're just going to have to eat it and make some moves that are below market or look below market if they're truly going to get out of this. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. And to me, you got to move Vooch. Vooch is still, he gives them a little bit of a floor as a player. He's a very good rebounder. He can be a playmaker in the half court. He's kind of a stretch big man, even though he's in reality just a horrible three-point shooter like he was last year. But I think if they trade Vooch, they're going to be way worse. And I don't see any scenario where Vooch can really rebuild positive trade value this year. LaVine, on the other hand, his value can't get any lower. I think that people are obviously scared of the contract. 3 years, $137 million still remaining, but also his injury history. And LaVine only played 25 games last year. He didn't play well, and then he got hurt. But Zach LaVine's still 29 years old. We know he's really talented at getting to the basket and at shooting three-pointers with volume. So I think there is a scenario where LaVine could rebuild some trade value if he returns to the Bulls. I think it's much more important to get off Vucevic, who will be too slow to keep up with, you know, the pace they should be running at with Giddey at the controls. And, you know, he's going to want too many touches and too many shots. So if they can get off Vooch, I'll feel better about this offseason. Maybe LaVine can build up some trade value long term. But in reality, you know, the Bulls made the right decision to rebuild, but their delusion towards chasing the eighth seed means that they really stacked the deck against them in pulling off a successful rebuild coming up.
I saw somebody call the race to Cooper Flagg, the race to tank for Cooper Flagg, capture the flag. And I am 100% here for a game of capture the flag. And even if it means watching some losing basketball this year, Ricky, I am here for it. That is Ricky O'Donnell. He covers the Bulls and the NBA for SB Nation and my guest for the last few minutes here on The Score. Ricky, really appreciate the time and the insight, man. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
And he joins me on The Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. We'll hit a quick break. On the other side, we're going to get into some Cubs talk. And are we really sure that the Cubs are going to be sellers in a few weeks? We'll discuss that right after this.
We're back Live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Here comes the 2-2. And it's a bouncer off the bare hand of Wesneski. It goes to Swanson, who barehands it and throws to first in time. Now, is Wesneski okay? He waves at the dugout as if to say, yeah, I know, I shouldn't have done it. But he's not injured, apparently. When's the last time you saw two guys barehand the ball on the same play, Ron?
Yeah, you don't see that too often, that's for sure. And great play by Swanson. Not a great play by Wesneski. As you know, that's the one thing. The last thing you want to do is see your starting pitcher reach out for a ball, hit back up the middle with his bare hand, his pitching hand.
That heard right here on 670 The Score, your home for Chicago Cubs baseball with Pat and Ron on the call. I am Rami Makhlouf with you on The Score on a Monday night. We'll talk some Bears, some football with Sam Munson, lead analyst for Pro Football Focus, coming up at 7 o'clock. But I'm going to talk some Cubs with you right now, 312-644-6767. Yeah, didn't hurt his hand barehanding the ball there, but apparently Colton Brewer will tell you it does hurt your hand to punch walls. And he learned that the hard way. But that's not what we're here to talk about. Why to talk about the Cubs? Dude, that I feel bad for him because, Sean, and I know we're laughing about it right now. I don't know about you. Like I'm a little bit older now. I don't feel like I'm an old man. But like in my, I don't know, somewhere in my early 30s, I was like, yeah, don't punch stuff when you get mad. But up until then, I was still doing it. And I don't know that I ever broke it. I never went to a doctor afterwards. Right. But there were plenty of times where I was like, oh, man, I think I did something bad to my hand here being stupid.
I have Colton Brewer talking about it, actually, basically saying he thought it was a mistake, too.
Okay. To be in a situation like this is a bad thing. You know, I can only... you know, just keep praying to God and that I'll just, you know, come out on top of this and, you know, life going on, my career going on is going to be all right. And we'll see.
Ooh, that was a little bit more of a bummer than I thought it would be, but yes.
Yeah, me too. Now I feel even worse for laughing about it, but I hope he recovers from it as well. It's one stupid mistake. I don't want it to define him or to, like, derail his career, and I don't think it will. Like, if he can pitch... then somebody will find him and give him a chance.
It's his left hand too, so he's a right-handed pitcher. It's okay, but yeah, I mean, I feel you learn very quickly. Don't punch things because it doesn't end well.
I was doing it into my early 30s. Very dumb. Very, very stupid.
Oh, and, man, some of these games I've thought about it. I've looked at some of these walls and I'm like, man. Bet you I could just Andy Bernard one of these guys, right?
I almost flashed back to doing it just watching the Cubs this year and seeing how bad they've been. And I'm sure plenty of you have felt that way. And many of you are probably ready for them to be sellers at the trade deadline in, what, just over 3 weeks from now. But are we so sure? Are we so sure the Cubs are sellers already or that they should be? 312-644-6767. Sean and I were exchanging some texts leading up to the show, getting ready for it today. And Sean, I thought it was a good analogy. You likened it to like a bad relationship. You know what I mean? Where you're pretty sure you should get out, but then like you remember some of the nice things about that person, some of the good things that they've done for you, you know what? And you start trying to convince yourself that maybe you shouldn't get out, or maybe you should go back, you know. And yeah. I think that is a perfect analogy, because when you look at this Cubs team, and I'm laying out stuff that you may or may not know already, but okay, the bad. I'll lay out the bad first. They did start off the season 24-17. They won their first two divisional series of the season, but they're 18-32 since. They're 40-48 on the season. Their run differential is -26. That was the number that when I was getting ready for the show today and getting ready to talk some Cubs, that number really, really popped out to me. I didn't think... I guess I haven't looked at the run differential column in a minute. I didn't think it was that bad, man. And 40 and 48.
It's a good thing you do, too, because like you talk about, like, can the Cubs go on a run like they did last year? That was one of the big things. The Cubs' run differential was one of the best in baseball, despite the bad record. So they were scoring runs, just not winning games. The Cubs aren't scoring runs and still just, you know, not getting a lot of production out of players right now, unfortunately.
So -26 run differential, 6 back in the wild card race. Fangraphs, for whatever weight you put in that, they have the Cubs at a 6.6% chance of making the postseason. So that's the part where you're looking at it and you're like, I got to get out of this relationship. Something's got to change. Something's got to change by July 31st, and I got to get out of this. But Sean, like I said, you start thinking about some of the good stuff, some of the happy times with that person, and then you go, maybe not. Maybe I should jump to any conclusions. And last season, you alluded to it, the Cubs were 42-47 at the All-Star break. They were still six games under 500 as late as July 20th. They continued to stumble until they won eight straight and 10 of 11 from July 18th to July 29th. All of a sudden, they were 76-64 by September 6th, and then the collapse started after that. So that, but you do look at that and you go, man, they made a run last year when things looked bad and they were almost a lock to make the playoffs. Maybe they can do something like that again. And when it comes to one of the players that would be on the trading block, should you become sellers, Cody Bellinger, he delivered last summer when he led the league with 40 hits and a .400 batting average in July. And he also had eight home runs and 24 RBI in 26 games that month. So you go, well, maybe Cody Bellinger is about to turn this thing around. Maybe the Cubs are about to turn this thing around like they did last year. And we don't need to be sellers right now. And on top of that, and this more than those numbers or that history that the Cubs have of doing what they did last year. More than that, what makes me question if this team should be sellers, if they will be sellers, is sort of the timeline of this whole thing. Because you're in your first year with Craig Counsell as an $8 million manager. And on top of that, if you're selling, who are you selling exactly? And what does that do to the timeline of the Chicago Cubs and when they can make me happy again as a Chicago sports fan? Because if you're telling me you're going to trade, I don't know, three, four pieces from this current team, three, four major, or even two or three major leaguers off this current roster, how exactly do we reload? And when exactly do we reload? And when is this team actually ready to contend? Because I was told it would be this year. I was told that Craig Counsell was coming in here to manage a playoff team. And if you're telling me that by being sellers, that the Cubs are pushing this timeline back 2 or 3 years, where we're not even looking at contending by next year, in the second year of Craig Counsell's $8 million a year contract, when exactly and how exactly do you reload? If the Cubs sell this season, and I would understand if they did, but, and I've been forgiving when they came out on the wrong end of bidding wars for a Shohei or a Juan Soto or who is the Japanese pitcher that the Dodgers get? His name escapes me right now. But Yoshinobu
Yamamoto.
Thank you very much. They were in all of those, or at least reports where they were in all of those, and they just came up short. And look, man, when you come up short against the Yankees and the Dodgers, those are two teams. Not many teams should be outspending the Cubs, but I look at that and I go, okay. I mean, New York and L.A. they're going to outspend you. Their TV deals are ridiculous. I know the Cubs got Marquee and they built it so that they could sort of fund this thing and fund winning baseball. But what those two organizations make in those markets is a different level than what the Cubs are doing. So when they lost those bidding wars, I went, nah, that sucks, but okay. If they're sellers this year, it is imperative. And I don't have the list of free agents this offseason here in front of me. But it is imperative and necessary, and I'll be losing my mind if you're not out there getting the best players available on the free agent market to restock the shelves. That's the only way that I'll be okay with this Cubs team being sellers, because being sellers and trading two or three players off the major league roster, and I'm not talking about like guys at the back of the bullpen, but if they're trading two or three guys that they told us were pillars as they built something new here and were part of a team that was going to contend here in the near future, if that's what we're doing, those guys better be replaced and the pocketbook better be opened. Because if I see a team that's selling And I see a team that's not buying in the offseason and buying the best free agents money can buy. And they're trying to sell us on, oh, no, the prospects are coming up. We got this farm system and the prospects are coming up. Just give them a chance. They'll in 2 years, this will be a contending baseball club. We're building something here. I'm going to have a hard time going along with that plan. I don't know about you, but that more than a team that turned it around last year in July and after the All-Star break, more that the timeline more than that makes me second guess or question or wonder if I want them to be sellers at the deadline. We can open up the phone lines and we'll get back into some Cubs talk a little later in the 7 o'clock hour. But coming up right after this, Sam Monson, lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Focus. He'll join me, Rami Makhlouf, right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Yes.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Here comes the 2-2. And it's a bouncer off the bare hand of Wesneski. It goes to Swanson, who barehands it and throws to first in time. Now, is Wesneski okay? He waves at the dugout as if to say, yeah, I know, I shouldn't have done it. But he's not injured, apparently. When's the last time you saw two guys barehand the ball on the same play, Ron?
Yeah, you don't see that too often, that's for sure. And great play by Swanson. Not a great play by Wesneski. As you know, that's the one thing. The last thing you want to do is see your starting pitcher reach out for a ball, hit back up the middle with his bare hand, his pitching hand.
That hurt right here on 670 The Score, your home for Chicago Cubs baseball with Pat and Ron on the call. I am Rami Makhlouf with you on The Score on a Monday night. We'll talk some Bears, some football with Sam Monson, lead analyst for Pro Football Focus, coming up at 7 o'clock. But going to talk some Cubs with you right now, 312-644-6767. Yeah, didn't hurt his hand barehanding the ball there, but apparently Colton Brewer will tell you it does hurt your hand to punch walls. And he learned that the hard way. But that's not what we're here to talk about. Wanted to talk about the Cubs. Dude, that I feel bad for him because, Sean, and I know we're laughing about it right now. I don't know about you. Like I'm a little bit older now. I don't feel like I'm an old man. But like somewhere in my early 30s, I was like, yeah, don't punch stuff when you get mad. But up until then, I was still doing it. And I don't know that I ever broke it. I never went to a doctor afterwards. Right. But there were plenty of times where I was like, oh, man, I think I did something bad to my hand here being stupid.
I have Colton Brewer talking about it, actually, basically saying he thought it was a mistake, too.
Okay. To be in a situation like this is a bad thing. I can only... just keep praying to God and that I'll just, come out on top of this and, life going on, my career going on is going to be all right. And we'll see.
Ooh, that was a little bit more of a bummer than I thought it would be, but yes.
Yeah, me too. Now I feel even worse for laughing about it, but I hope he recovers from it as well. It's one stupid mistake. I don't want it to define him or to, like, derail his career, and I don't think it will. Like, if he can pitch... then somebody will find him and right. give him a chance. People understand.
It's his left hand too, so he's a right-handed pitcher. It's okay, but yeah, I mean, I feel you learn very quickly. Don't punch things because it doesn't
end
well.
I was doing it into my early 30s. Very dumb. Very, very stupid.
Oh, man, some of these games I've thought about it. I've looked at some of these walls and I'm like, man. I bet you I could just aim Bernard one of these guys, right?
I almost flashed back to doing it just watching the Cubs this year and seeing how bad they've been. And I'm sure plenty of you have felt that way. And many of you are probably ready for them to be sellers at the trade deadline in, just over 3 weeks from now. But are we so sure? Are we so sure the Cubs are sellers already or that they should be? 312-644-6767. Sean and I were exchanging some texts leading up to the show, getting ready for it today. And Sean, I thought it was a good analogy. You likened it to like a bad relationship. You know what I mean? Where you're pretty sure you should get out, but then like you remember some of the nice things about that person, some of the good things that they've done for you, and you start trying to convince yourself that maybe you shouldn't get out or maybe you should go back, And yeah. I think that is a perfect analogy because when you look at this Cubs team, and I'm laying out stuff that you may or may not know already, but okay, the The bad. I'll lay out the bad first. They did start off the season 24-17. They won their first two divisional series of the season, but they're 18-32 since. They're 40-48 on the season. Their run differential is minus 26. That was the number that when I was getting ready for the show today and getting ready to talk some Cubs, that number really, really popped out to me. I guess I haven't looked at the run differential column in a minute. I didn't think it was that bad, man. And 40 and 48.
It's a good thing you do too, because like you talk about, like, can the Cubs go on a run like they did last year? That was one of the big things. The Cubs' run differential was one of the best in baseball, despite the bad record. So they were scoring runs, just not winning games. The Cubs aren't scoring runs and still just, you know, not getting a lot of production out of players right now, unfortunately.
So minus 26 run differential, six back in the wild card race. FanGraphs, for whatever weight you put in that, they have the Cubs at a 6.6% chance of making the postseason. So that's the part where you're looking at it and you're like, I got to get out of this relationship. Something's got to change. Something's got to change by July 31st, and I got to get out of this. But Sean, like I said, you start thinking about some of the good stuff, some of the happy times with that person, and then you go, maybe not. Maybe I should jump to any conclusions. And last season, you alluded to it, the Cubs were 42-47 at the All-Star break. They were still six games under 500 as late as July 20th. They continued to stumble until they won eight straight and 10 of 11 from July 18th to July 29th. All of a sudden, they were 76-64 by September 6th, and then the collapse started after that. But you do look at that and you go, man, they made a run last year when things looked bad, and they were almost a lock to make the playoffs. Maybe they can do something like that again. And when it comes to one of the players that would be on the trading block, should you become sellers, Cody Bellinger, he delivered last summer when he led the league with 40 hits and a .400 batting average in July. And he also had eight home runs and 24 RBI in 26 games that month. So you go, well, maybe Cody Bellinger is about to turn this thing around. Maybe the Cubs are about to turn this thing around like they did last year. And we don't need to be sellers right now. And on top of that, and this more than those numbers or that history that the Cubs have of doing what they did last year. More than that, what makes me question if this team should be sellers, if they will be sellers, is sort of the timeline of this whole thing. Because you're in your first year with Craig Counsell as an $8 million manager. And on top of that, if you're selling, who are you selling exactly? And what does that do to the timeline of the Chicago Cubs and when they can make me happy again as a Chicago sports fan? Because if you're telling me you're going to trade, I don't know, three, four pieces from this current team, three, four major, or even two or three major leaguers off this current roster, how exactly do we reload? And when exactly do we reload? And when is this team actually ready to contend? Because I was told it would be this year. I was told that Craig Counsell was coming in here to manage a playoff team. And if you're telling me that by being sellers, that the Cubs are pushing this timeline back two or three years, where we're not even looking at contending by next year, in the second year of Craig Counsell's $8 million a year contract, when exactly and how exactly do you reload? If the Cubs sell this season, and I would understand if they did, but I've been forgiving when they came out on the wrong end of bidding wars for a Shohei or a Juan Soto or who is the Japanese pitcher that the Dodgers get? His name escapes me right now. But Yoshinobu
Yamamoto.
Thank you very much. They were in all of those, or at least reports where they were in all of those, and they just came up short. And look, man, when you come up short against the Yankees and the Dodgers, those are two teams. Not many teams should be outspending the Cubs. But I look at that and I go, okay. I mean, New York and L.A. they're gonna outspend you. Their TV deals are ridiculous. I know the Cubs got Marquee and they built it so that they could sort of fund this thing and fund winning baseball. But what those two organizations make in those markets is a a different level than what the Cubs are doing. So when they lost those bidding wars, I went, nah, that sucks, but okay. If they're sellers this year, it is imperative. And I don't have the list of free agents this offseason here in front of me, but it is imperative and necessary. And I'll be losing my mind if you're not out there getting the best players available on the free agent market to restock the shelves. That's the only way that I'll be okay with this Cubs team being sellers. Because being sellers and trading two or three players off the major league roster, and I'm not talking about like guys at the back of the bullpen, but if they're trading two or three guys that they told us were pillars as they built something new here and were part of a team that was going to contend here in the near future, if that's what we're doing, those guys better be replaced and the pocketbook better be opened. Because if I see a team that's selling and I see a team that's not buying in the offseason and buying the best free agents money can buy, and they're trying to sell us on, oh no, the prospects are coming up. We got this farm system and the prospects are coming up. Just give them a chance. They'll in 2 years, this will be a contending baseball club. We're building something here. I'm gonna have a hard time going along with that plan. I don't know about you, but that more than a team that turned it around last year in July and after the All-Star break, more that the timeline more than that makes me second guess or question or wonder if I want them to be sellers at the deadline. We can open up the phone lines and we'll get back into some Cubs talk a little later in the 7 o'clock hour. But coming up right after this, Sam Monson, lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Focus. He'll join me, Rami Makhlouf, right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.